Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Kelly Jean Kelly, Alice Bryant, and Brian Lynn. Later, we will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, here is Kelly Jean Kelly.
The leader of the highest court in the United States will likely receive a lot of attention next month. In January, Chief Justice John Roberts will supervise the trial of President Donald Trump in the U.S. Senate. Lawmakers there will decide if Trump is guilty of two charges against him, abuse of power and obstruction of Congress. If guilt is the ruling, Trump will be removed from office. However, the Senate is expected to find him not guilty. Chief Justice John Roberts will have more influence on Trump's presidency back at the Supreme Court building, across the street from the Senate. There, Roberts will play a major part in deciding several important cases that directly affect Trump. One deals with whether a president needs to give his financial records to government investigators and lawyers. Trump has long fought to keep his finances secret, and unlike other recent presidents, he has refused to make his tax information public. In a few months, the Supreme Court will decide whether Trump must offer his financial records. The court's ruling will affect future presidents and also the current one. It will likely come in the middle of Trump's re-election campaign. How Roberts will vote on the case is not known. In recent decisions, Roberts has often joined with the four generally conservative judges. However, he also sometimes agrees with decisions made by the four more liberal judges. Roberts may be the deciding vote in the financial records case. But first, the Senate trial. The U.S. Constitution says the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court will oversee a trial to decide whether the president is removed from office. But the job is mostly ceremonial. The senators, not the Chief Justice, set the rules for the trial. Roberts' job is to keep the process moving in an orderly way. People who know the Chief Justice say he will take his job at the trial seriously. He is likely reading about the only two other impeachment trials in U.S. history, those of Andrew Johnson in 1868 and Bill Clinton in 1999. In both cases, the presidents remained in office. During Clinton's trial, the Chief Justice was William Rehnquist. A law school professor who worked for Rehnquist at the time said the Chief Justice had relatively little to do during the trial. Roberts has not spoken publicly about leading the Trump impeachment trial. Observers have noted that Roberts does not like calling attention to himself. But he did take the unusual step of disagreeing publicly with Trump in November 2018. After the president spoke against judges who had ruled against him, Roberts issued a statement. It rejected the idea that federal judges worked for one president or another, and it defended an extraordinary group of dedicated judges doing their level best to do equal right to those appearing before them. Roberts said that an independent judiciary is something we should all be thankful for. I'm Kelly Jean Kelly.
Older adults who breathe in very small particles from air pollution for even a day or two are more likely to be hospitalized for many diseases, a recent U.S. study suggests. Researchers examined particles called PM2.5, a mixture of solid particles and liquid. The particles are too small for the eye to see. Each one is about 3% of the size of a human hair or smaller. PM2.5 can include dust, dirt, soot, and smoke. The researchers confirmed earlier links between short-term exposure to PM2.5 and a higher risk of hospitalization and death from some diseases. Those include heart and lung diseases, diabetes, and blood flow blockages in the legs. They also found new links between short-term exposure and more hospitalizations for things like kidney failure and sepsis. Sepsis is a life-threatening illness caused by blood infections. The study team examined hospital records for Medicare patients around the United States from 2000 to 2012. The researchers chose patients based on their home zip codes. They looked at data on air pollution levels the day before and day of each patient's hospitalization. The study included 214 different health conditions. Yaguang Wei is an environmental health researcher at Harvard T.H. Chan School of Public Health in Boston, Massachusetts. He is also the lead writer of the study. Wei said the most common and dangerous health effects of PM2.5 exposure have been heart and breathing diseases. These are the leading causes of hospitalization, emergency room visits, and even death, he said. The World Health Organization, or WHO, released air quality guidelines in 2005. The guidelines say people should not be exposed to average PM2.5 levels above 25 micrograms per cubic meter of air for more than 24 hours. Few studies have looked at the connection between short-term exposure to fine particulate matter and conditions such as sepsis, fluid disorders, kidney failure, and intestinal problems. For such diseases, each cubic meter rise in short-term average fine PM levels was linked with a yearly rise of around 2,050 hospital visits. That costs $31 million in hospital visits, plus costs for care afterward. Even air pollution levels below safety levels set by the WHO were linked with a higher risk of hospitalizations for conditions such as heart and breathing disorders. These diseases have been tied in earlier studies to PM2.5 exposure. For these diseases, each cubic meter rise in short-term average fine PM levels was linked with a yearly rise of around 3,642 hospital visits. That cost $69 million in hospital visits, plus costs for care afterward. Wei and the team of researchers reported their findings in the BMJ Medical Journal. costs related to short-term air pollution exposure are probably far higher than the research suggests, said study co-writer Francesca Domenici. She is also a public health researcher at Harvard. In an email to Reuters Health, she said the major limit of this study was that costs following hospital visits were not well documented. People may not be able to avoid exposure to air pollution, but they can still do things to protect themselves, said Matthew Loxham. He is with the University Hospital Southampton in the United Kingdom. Loxham said in an email that everyone should pay attention to local air quality levels and guidance. But people with heart conditions, asthma, lung disease, and other illnesses should pay special attention. I'm Alice Bryant.
During 2019, we covered some big developments involving computer and device technology. We also reported on growing opposition to facial recognition systems and warnings by the inventor of the World Wide Web about the Internet's future. Google announced it had completed successful experiments that led to a major development in quantum computing technology. In one test, the team said its quantum computer processor was able to complete a complex mathematical problem in just 200 seconds. The scientists said the same problem would have taken the world's fastest supercomputer 10,000 years to finish. The researchers described the new progress as quantum supremacy. This term describes a point at which a quantum computer can perform a calculation that a traditional computer could never complete within its lifetime. Israeli researchers reported they had built the world's first 3D-printed heart using a patient's own cells. The scientists said the small printed heart was the first ever 3D-printed heart created to include both tissue and blood vessels. The team expressed excitement at the progress made, but said much more research is needed to come up with a fully working 3D-printed human heart that can effectively pump blood. South Korea's Hyundai Motor Group announced the launch of its first vehicle with a solar top or roof charging system. The new system became available for Hyundai's new Sonata hybrid model. The vehicle has a structure of solar equipment on top of the car to capture energy from the sun to help charge the battery. Facebook announced the launch of its own cryptocurrency in a major new push into the worldwide financial services industry. The U.S.-based social media company said its digital currency, called Libra, could become available publicly in the first half of 2020. Facebook said Libra will be available to anyone with a smartphone and internet connection. The company said the service is designed to make moving money around the world just as easy as sending a text message. Several American companies announced new delivery services involving drone aircraft. CVS Health Corporation is partnering with international shipping company UPS to bring drugs and other products directly to people's home by drone. Other companies said they also plan to carry out major drone delivery tests or launch new services in 2020. San Francisco became the first major U.S. city to ban facial recognition technology by local law enforcement and all other city agencies. The ban was part of a bill that restricts surveillance technologies. The measure also ordered San Francisco agencies to describe any current or future facial recognition activities. The man credited with inventing the World Wide Web called for major changes to make the Internet better for humanity. Tim Berners-Lee first proposed the Internet system 30 years ago. Berners-Lee spoke several times during 2019 about the current state of the Internet, now used by about half the world's population. In an open letter, Berners-Lee said the web had clearly created great opportunities for humanity to progress and made life easier for millions of people. It also gave groups traditionally not heard a new voice in society. However, he added that the web had also provided new ways for scammers to carry out crimes and given a voice to those who spread hatred. I'm Brian Lynn.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. Ulysses Grant was elected President of the United States in 1868. Grant was a military hero. He led Union troops of the North to victory over Confederate troops of the South in the Civil War. Grant was extremely popular, but he was a much better general than he was a politician. As president, it was not long before he got into trouble in the battles of politics and government. Larry West and Frank Oliver talk about the first term of President Ulysses Grant.
Grant resigned from the army to run for president. However, he ran on his record as a winning general. "Let us have peace," he often said, and the people believed he would guarantee peace. In fact, Grant guaranteed nothing. As a presidential candidate, he offered no new national programs. So, as president, he had no new policies to carry out. He had few struggles with Congress, because he rarely asked Congress to do anything. Many events took place during Grant's two administrations, but he usually was not involved directly. He had problems only because he was linked indirectly to the men who were responsible.
One of President Grant's first problems was caused by two of his friends. They tried to take control of the gold market. The men were Jay Gould and James Fisk. Both were extremely rich. Gould and Fisk developed a plan to buy a large part of the nation's gold supply when the price was low. They would hold the gold until demand greatly increased the price. Then they would sell it and make a lot of money. To be successful, they had to prevent the government from selling gold on the market. Government sales of gold would keep the price down. So Gould and Fisk urged President Grant to stop the Treasury Department from selling gold. Grant refused to give them a firm promise.
The two men brought one of Grant's relatives into their plan. They paid him to write a letter to the president. It asked the president to halt government sales of gold. A messenger took the letter to the White House. He then sent a telegram to James Fisk saying the letter had been delivered. The telegram said, "Letter delivered. All right." Fisk thought this meant that President Grant had agreed to halt government sales of gold. So he began buying gold in huge amounts. Fisk was wrong. The words "all right" meant only that the letter had been delivered. They did not mean that Grant had agreed to the plan. In fact, Grant did not agree. He ordered the Treasury Department to sell gold to block the attempt by Gould and Fisk to control the gold market.
The result was that James Fisk and Jay Gould lost a great amount of money. So did other businessmen and bankers. Many Americans blamed President Grant for not acting quickly enough to stop the activity of his two friends. Concern about Grant grew after another incident was reported at the New York Customs Office. Two of Grant's friends there became involved in a plan to get money from importers. They used their official positions to earn huge amounts of money.
Grant also was criticized for one of his few independent actions as president. He tried to buy the Dominican Republic in the Caribbean. The island nation was ruled by a dictator, Buenaventura Báez. Báez was so dishonest that the people of the Dominican Republic were ready to overthrow him. Before this could happen, he offered to sell his country to the United States. When Grant received the offer, he sent a White House official to negotiate with Báez. The official returned with a treaty giving the Dominican Republic to the United States for $1.5 million. Grant immediately sent American warships to the Dominican Republic. He wanted to keep Báez in power until the treaty was completed. Grant asked the Senate to approve the treaty. Many senators opposed it. They said taking control of the Dominican Republic would cost too much money. They also said it was a bad idea for the United States to take control of any nation in the Caribbean. President Grant went to the Capitol building himself to urge senators to approve the treaty. His efforts failed. The treaty was defeated.
Grant's biggest national problem was the political situation in the former rebel states of the South. After the Civil War, most Southern states were governed by radical members of the Republican Party. Radicals supported citizenship rights and voting rights for blacks. In the late 1860s, the radicals began to lose power. Many failed to be reelected to state office. They were being defeated by candidates of the Democratic Party. Democrats did not want blacks to have any rights at all.
The first radical Republicans to lose power were those in Virginia. The change there was made peacefully. Not so in other Southern states. In Tennessee, Georgia, and North Carolina, Democrats used threats and violence to win elections. Their campaigns often were led by members of the Ku Klux Klan. The Klan was a secret organization of white men. Members believed white people were greater than black people. Wearing cloths over their faces, Klansmen broke up radical Republican political meetings. They threatened, beat, and killed blacks to keep them out of politics. They did the same thing to whites who tried to organize or help blacks.
Before long, Ku Klux Klan groups were formed in every southern state. By 1871, radical Republican congressmen were demanding a new law to destroy the Ku Klux Klan. A committee headed by radicals was named to investigate Klan activities in the South. The committee heard reports of the Klan's brutal acts. It helped prepare a bill to control the Klan. After much debate, Congress passed the bill. The new law gave the president power to declare military rule in the South. Democrats charged that the real purpose of the law was to keep radical Republican state governments in power. President Grant did not wait long to use his powers under the new law. He declared military rule in a large area of South Carolina. Thousands of people there were arrested. They were tried in federal courts. Juries were made up mainly of blacks and radical whites.
This kind of justice made Southerners feel even more bitterness toward the North. It also angered a number of moderate members of the Republican Party. They said the federal government should not help radical Republicans stay in power in the South. Some of these moderate Republicans broke away from President Grant and the radicals. They called themselves liberal Republicans and formed a new political party. They held their own presidential nominating convention for the election of 1872. They nominated Horace Greeley as their candidate. Greeley published the New York Tribune newspaper.
Democrats believed their only chance to win the election was to support the new liberal Republicans. So they, too, chose Horace Greeley as their presidential candidate. As expected, the radicals who controlled the main Republican Party nominated Grant for a second term. The campaign between Grant and Greeley was very strange. Grant made no speeches. He spent the summer at a holiday town on the Atlantic Ocean coast. His supporters, however, were not silent. They called Greeley a fool and a traitor. They refused to treat him as a serious candidate. Unlike Grant, Greeley did campaign hard, but he had little financial help. He also was hurt by a poorly organized campaign.
On Election Day in 1872, Ulysses Grant won a big victory. He got the votes of 31 of the 37 states. Horace Greeley died 3 weeks after the election. The new liberal Republican Party died with him. Ulysses Grant and the radical Republicans would govern for another 4 years.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.